From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM later on tonight. Open lines, and it's also contest night. I'll tell you about that. Here's what's happening. Well, police in Dallas, and this could be all over the country, are warning drivers about a new method criminals are using to steal credit card information, this time at gas pumps. At least five Exxon stations in the North Dallas area recently have been targeted by tech-savvy criminals who installed, get this, Bluetooth-equipped skimming machines on gas pumps. The sophisticated technology is used with a Bluetooth connection. The scary part, it transmits the data. The thieves don't even have to be near the gas station, just somewhere where they can pick up the signal. Unbelievable. Be careful. Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump has now endorsed three top GOP office holders, House Speaker Paul Ryan, Arizona Senator John McCain, and the New Hampshire Senator, for re-election Friday night after declining to do so earlier this week. Why the change of heart? Let's check in with Howard Bloom, who's been watching all the campaigns for us. Howard, this doesn't fit well.
Well, Donald was slammed for the first 3 days of this week. He was really on the edge. The Republican Party was on the verge of abandoning him. This is his peace gesture. This is his attempt to bury the hatchet. But take a look at what's happened in the 2 days since Tuesday night when we last talked. Both of the candidates have taken hits. Both of them have made gains. But the one taking the biggest hits was Donald Trump. Now, here are the facts. You judge for yourself. Trump's positives. In the latest Reuters Ipsos poll released on Friday, Clinton's lead over Trump narrowed to less than 3%, which was down from a nearly 8-point lead on Monday. Good news, relatively speaking, for Donald Trump. Real Clear Politics, which averages the polls, shows Hillary with only a very slight edge on Donald. Again, good news for Donald Trump. Trump has coined a new phrase. Clinton is the queen of corruption. He has a new economic team. Six out of the 13 guys are named Steve. And who are they? They're financiers and hedge fund managers, including a tobacco company CEO and the head of the anti-tax group Club for Growth. These are the very billionaire Wall Street boys Trump promised us he would remove politics from the hands of. But Trump says these are a formidable group of experienced and talented individuals, and he says, I am going to be the greatest jobs president our country has ever seen. On Monday, he's going to give a speech on economic policy, and you're right, he has buried the hatchet, and we'll see if that works. We'll see if it's accepted. And he was endorsed by Clint Eastwood. Those are the positives. The negatives, the Speaker of the Wisconsin State Assembly wrote that we are Ryan Republicans here in Wisconsin, not Trump Republicans, and went on to say that I'm embarrassed that Donald Trump is leading our ticket. Trump is losing his edge over Hillary in polls about handling the economy. That's always been his strong point. He has, in the words of one newspaper, the most unfavorable ratings of any candidate ever to lead a major party ticket since the advent of polling. That's as unfavorable as this week. And Paul Ryan, you know that Trump was heading a rally in Wisconsin tonight. Three people, very important people, refused to attend. One was Paul Ryan, one was Scott Walker, the governor of Wisconsin, and one was Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson. They all avoided the event, and here's the killer. Paul Manafort, who is Donald Trump's campaign manager, made a slip of the tongue on CBS News. He was asked if he supports Paul Ryan. He said, I support him as a speaker, and I know that after next week, I'm going to be supporting him for president, too. Talk about slips of the tongue.
I mean, what a blunder. And look, with what's been going on this week with Donald Trump, Howard, in some respects, you have to say, okay, he shows now that he's amenable to compromise. But when you look at it, he changed so quickly from, I'm not going to endorse these people, to now he's endorsed them. That makes it sound like he doesn't know what he's doing.
It makes Americans extremely nervous. In the poll, the Fox News poll that appeared on Tuesday, there was a very important statistic buried in the middle. When it comes to handling nuclear weapons, people trust Hillary Clinton far more than they trust Donald Trump. Why? Because do you want a guy with ADHD who can't keep his attention on something for more than 15 seconds straight, and who changes his mind overnight, handling that nuclear button. By the time you, if you push that button and you change your mind 15 minutes later, it's too late.
It is too late. Howard, thanks. You have yourself a great weekend, and thanks for all the work you've been doing for us. Three different ways of designing a vaccine have now been shown to be completely protected against the Zika virus. Scientists found that all three offered protection in tests in monkeys. Zika has been deemed a public health hazard because it can cause serious birth defects. Teams around the world are working desperately to design a vaccine that can be given to people, but it is likely to be years before any is ready for widespread use. And would you be lining up to get that? I don't think I will. It is known as the DARK Act, denying Americans the right to know. It was signed by President Obama last Friday in the afterglow of the Democratic National Convention without fanfare or major media coverage. With a few strokes of his pen, President Obama scratched out the laws of Vermont, Connecticut, and Maine that required the labeling of genetically engineered foods. He also nullified the GE seed labeling laws in Vermont and Virginia that allowed farmers to choose what seeds they wanted to buy and plant. And for good measure, he preempted Alaska's law requiring the labeling of any GE fish or product of fish passed to protect the state's vital fisheries from contamination by recently approved genetically engineered salmon. The White House justified the DARK Act's massive onslaught on local democracy on the grounds that the bill would create national standards for labeling of GE foods. It does nothing of the sort. And as you know, Jeffrey Smith, who has been on our program and is an expert on GMOs, says that signing this bill into law was a disaster. How about that? When Quebec resident Simon-Pierre Cancel went to a diner at a restaurant with his partner in late May, he ordered beef tartare and said he repeatedly told the server that he is allergic to seafood. But when he began to eat, he quickly realized that he'd gotten the salmon tartare instead. He said the lights were dim. Who knew? Just after the waiter apologized and said he'd bring the beef, Canel says that he went into shock, was rushed to the hospital, went into cardiac arrest the next day, was in a coma for a couple of days after that, finally pulled out of it. Jeff Nelkin, our food safety coach. Jeff, this is a bad situation. People allergic to food like that, especially shellfish?
Well, you know, we do have people that have allergies and sensitivities, and it becomes real important that restaurants pay attention to the details, especially if a diner communicates to the server that they have an allergy. This information, again, as you can see, is a life and death matter and has to be taken seriously, and failure to accurately communicate this information can result in someone going into anaphylactic shock.
Now, in this particular case with the waiter literally screwing up, I mean, the guy could have died there, right?
Absolutely.
That's scary stuff. Thank you, Jeff. Have a good weekend yourself. Single people are more fulfilled, sociable, and self-sufficient than married people, despite being marginalized by society, according to a psychologist. After reviewing hundreds of studies, Dr. Bella DiPaolo of the University of California claims that the view that singles must be sad and lonely is nonsense and claims that people on their own often live more meaningful lives. Night owls in and around the Green Bay, Wisconsin area have been on the lookout this week for a frightening figure. A person dressed in an unkempt clown costume with full face makeup and carrying four black balloons has put a scare into some residents of the city on the shore of Lake Michigan. The clown is dubbed Gags by the administrator of a Facebook page. It was first spotted early Monday morning. The page contained several photos of the clown. Now you know why I don't like clowns. In a moment, sci-fi films and horror movies. Mr. Lobo's back with us on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Boy, I love it when commercials are now making reference to the program, right? Use the code UFO and things like that. Mr. Lobo back with us, host of the late night movie program Cinema Insomnia, which is a cult sensation for 15 years. and stars as the amazing Criswell in the film Plan 9. He lords over the late-night slumber party fun with his blend of humor and satire, and Mr. Lobo is the MC for the film festival like the Blob Fest. And here he is back on Coast to Coast. You are a favorite, Mr. Lobo.
Oh, greetings, George. It is a weird night. Can't you feel how weird it is out there?
Oh, my God, it's been strange. But how's my favorite host, Macabre?
Oh, George, that's so kind. You know, you guys are always so welcoming. I'm like a vampire. I have to be invited. And you guys always extend that invitation, and your staff is always so generous. And I really appreciate you having me back.
Well, I wanted to have fun tonight. You know, the last couple weeks, it's been so intense with the Democratic and the Republican convention, and everybody seems to be uptight. I figured, let's just have a night to have a couple hours of fun with Mr. Lobo and talk about sci-fi and horror films, and then I'll do my open lines tonight, and those will be strange,
too. Don't
we have to do
that. I think I'd rather have, like, a disembodied brain or maybe like a self-aware hunk of cheese running the country. Then the choices.
Speaking of cheese, Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Yes.
They've got this whacked out clown running around with black balloons, and he looks like that It thing from the Stephen King film, television show, and everything else.
This is scary. Scary. It could be a killer clown from outer space.
Who knows? Perhaps. I don't like clowns, and I don't know why, but I just don't like them.
Clowns because you're an intelligent, thinking human being. Nobody likes a clown unless there's serial killers.
Well, I don't like the way they make those balloons and look at you, and I just don't like it.
They're creepy.
They're creepy. So what's new with you?
Lots of things. The channel is going well.
Good.
OSI 74. Cinema Insomnia is celebrating 15 years, and we're showing a lot of our older episodes. And you know what our biggest town is? You know we're the most popular, where more people are watching Cinema Insomnia right now, more than any other?
Is it a big town or a small one?
It's a favorite town of yours.
Detroit?
No.
St. Louis?
St. Louis.
Really?
63,000 views from St. Louis, George. They're just coming out of nowhere.
Well, that's because 62,000 of them were for me.
I'm sure they were. So thank you, St. Louis, and thank the Nighthawk there.
You know what? They had a UFO over the arch a couple days ago. It was weird. It's gone all around the country.
Well, it's a tourist attraction.
Yeah.
Probably get aliens come into the arch all the time.
They probably want to know what that is. You never know. So what's new in the world of horror?
Lots of things are happening in horror, and lots of things are happening in science fiction, and we're kind of in this new, exciting time where, especially with all the streaming channels and stuff now, there's a lot of access to a lot of material. There was just a study that came out recently that people who like trash films like Plan 9 from Outer Space and The Toxic Avenger and Sharknado are highly intelligent, usually have higher than average education. So we don't have bad taste. We're just really smart, really intelligent people.
How do you pick your films for the show?
A lot of times I don't get to pick them. It's just... It's done for you, right? It's what we can afford sometimes, So a lot of times, we're hamburger helper a lot of times.
Yeah. Is there any public domain films that are just free that you can just use?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. There are some. A lot of them that you wouldn't expect, like Plan 9 from Outer Space, that's public domain. And Night of the Living Dead is public domain. And The Brain That Wouldn't Die is public domain. So there's a lot of... popular ones that are public domain, and and every once in a while we get to do ones that aren't public domain, especially with live events like the Blob Fest. We get to show The Blob, which is one of my favorite films, and we showed This Island Earth this year with The Blob as a double feature, and I love that film as well.
Well, because some of these movies, Mr. Lobo, aren't that expensive to make and produce, people have categorized them as you know, classic B-type films and movies.
Sure.
But they've got a life to themselves. They hang around for a long time, and they're not bad movies. They're just different.
Like what I would like to say is they're not bad movies, just misunderstood.
That's true.
And I think that what's nice about those movies is, one, I think that, the low-budget aspect of it is, I don't know, it's like mom's home cooking, you know? You kind of feel like, you know what, I could make that in my backyard, you know? Maybe I'll hang some flying saucers from a string and make my own movie. You know, there's implied participation. And I think some of it, too, is you get to use your imagination. You know, I think, like, you know, in a stage environment, two guys sitting in front of a shower curtain could be piloting an airplane. But, you know, in a movie, we're not as forgiving for something like that. You know, but in other cultures like Japan, they know that a plastic boat in a bathtub represents a battleship in the ocean, and the audience takes that in and brings their imagination into it to complete that illusion. And you know, sometimes that abstraction, you know, that you're giving the audience something to do when they're watching. They get to use their imagination, which I think it kind of goes back to that thing where the less you see of the monster, the scarier the monster
is. Yeah,
exactly. And I think any time you have an abstraction or you know, anything where the audience has to pick up some of the slack with their own imagination, you know, that's an opportunity for a very strong bond with the audience. You know, I think black and white movies are like that. I think that abstraction of it being black and white, you know, your brain has to fill the rest of that in, and you get that really strong connection to the material. Like, I could never imagine The Twilight Zone in color.
No. And then when they did Night Gallery in color, it wasn't the same.
Wasn't as good, no. And, you know, the stories weren't moral tales either. It was a different...
Yeah, it was a different feel.
Different feel altogether, but a good program as well. You know, I think looking back on those episodes, they're stronger. But the Twilight Zone, of course, is just one of those things that's just hard to beat across the board.
When Hitchcock did Psycho, the movie, the shower scene, which was one of the scariest, he never showed the Janet Leigh getting stabbed, did he? You got she did.
There was no knife inserting into the flesh at any point. It was all implied, and that whole sequence was put together as a totally different project with its own director and everything. So there was so much put into that one moment in that film. It was almost like a separate project, that scene. There's a very famous story where Hitchcock was having them do different sound effects of stabbing different fruits and vegetables to see what was the right sound of the knife entering the body. And then he just sat there in silence, and then as he walked out the door, he just said, "Cassava."
Yeah, he was one weird guy.
Yeah, he was a weird guy. He used to send weird dolls to his actors and all sorts of things.
I heard a story, which I'm not going to repeat because mm-hmm. I just heard it as a rumor.
Sure.
But he did some weird stuff with some of his talent. One time it said it involved him kind of having them tied to a pole. It was weird stuff, but I'm not going to get into it.
Sure. Well, he's well known that he had a dark sense of humor, and he also had a temper, and sometimes it's hard to know how many of those, what stories to believe and what are...
But what a mind he had, huh? Oh, my God.
Brilliant. Yeah, he was a painter. You know, he painted all of his movies as a comic strip with paintings, and then they had to make the scenes match his paintings. You know, the guy was one of the greatest artists of the 20th century.
How would you compare him, Mr. Lobo, to the cult movie director Ed Wood, for example?
Well, Ed Wood is an auteur also, you know, and I think the interesting thing about Ed Wood is that, you know, he was a writer. He could write a screenplay in 2 days, and, you know, he would sell a screenplay for $400, and then a director would take that film and end up making $4,000. And so he just started directing his own movies to try to make more money for himself. So he didn't really have the visual eye of a
of a director. William C. Thompson, who did all the cinematography for those movies, you know, he had worked with Bela Lugosi, and he had worked on a lot of movies in the 30s, like White Gorilla, and he did a lot of silent movies. And so Ed Wood's movies have a, even though they were made in the 50s and in the early 60s, have this feel of almost like a stagey feel, like of a 1930s movie. You know, he didn't really have quite a very strong visual sense, you know, it was all from the heart. And I think that when you watch that and you get a real sense of the artist, or a sense of the director and the story they're trying to tell, whether they're Ed Wood or whether they're Alfred Hitchcock, you know, you don't feel like it's a studio film where there's too many cooks in the kitchen. And
well, that's true. We're going to come back with more with Mr. Lobo in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And we're going to have some fun all night long, my friends. Mr. Lobo with us for a couple hours. We're going to take some calls with you next hour on your favorite sci-fi and horror films. We're going to have a couple contests throughout the night during open lines. All kinds of things. And talk about fun. Wait until you get us in Asheville, North Carolina on August 27th. The music you just heard from Frankie Avalon, we're going to have a band there because Tom Danheiser is our executive producer for that event, and he's in the music.
We're going to have a really cool band, and this is going to be such a fun time. We just ordered the furniture yesterday for the stage. The guy who is guarding the piece, we're going to have a piece of wreckage.
A Roswell
piece. Yeah, from Roswell. The guy who is guarding that just called me, and he said, hey, my uniform's ready. I'm so amped at this, and this is going to be such a fun show.
My uniform's ready?
Well, because he's going to guard it, so he's got to look like a security guard, right? He is a security guard. Right, so they wear a uniform.
Some of them wear, like, suits with patches on it and stuff, but this is a full-looking guard, isn't it?
And it's funny, though. He just called me and said, it's ready to go.
Now, there are 44 seats left on the bottom level, which is the biggest level. People can go to our website, coasttocoastam.com, click the little picture at the highlight reel. It'll take you into the theater's website. Look for August 27th. That's the date of the event. You click that. You can pick out your own seats. And once those 44 are gone, Thomas, then what?
Nothing more on the bottom. Then they start releasing what's left on the top.
The good old balcony.
Yes.
Will you be able to see me from up there?
You can see everything. It's such a small theater.
George!
It's really great.
George!
No, it's not like that at all.
It's not like that. Okay, good.
It's very nice.
I'm looking forward to it. Yeah. I've never been to Asheville, North Carolina.
Neither have I, but everybody I deal with on the phone, they're so friendly. They're really nice people.
We're going to have some fun. Okay, thanks, Tom. And we'll look forward to tweets and your texts during open lines as well. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Mr. Lobo, as we talk about horror films and sci-fi TV shows and everything else. And he's got a show called, of course, Cinema Insomnia, that he streams now. It's on the website osi74.com. And Mr. Lobo, is that on demand, or can people have to wait to a certain time when you stream it?
It's on demand, so they can
watch
it any time. Yes, I really like that. I don't know if everyone can hear that, but I heard the Frankie Avalon song.
Oh, everybody heard that one. Yeah.
I think they should have used that for First Spaceship on Venus. I mean, that was 1959, right? Right around
classics.
The same time period.
Yeah.
That was a missed opportunity.
We go back almost the same time period, don't we? How old are you?
I'm heading at 50, so I'm maybe not quite.
You're younger than me. You're younger than me. I'm 906. All right, well, I will be in next June, by the way. 900.
That's unbelievable, George.
I just keep going.
It's the mustache.
It might be.
That's like Samson's, hair.
When Delilah had it cut off.
Yeah, you don't want to do that. You want to keep that mustache.
You lose
that
strength.
Your power.
Yeah, that's right. So when you're doing these horror hosting jobs.
Yes.
Do you write your scripts? Do you ad lib around films? How do you handle it?
I do all of that. Usually what I do is for the television program, I actually watch the film about four or five times, and I write a bunch of structured bits about the film. Sometimes if anyone is alive, I will do an interview with someone from the film or something related to the film. I might do an interview segment. And then there are kind of parts where I just sort of leave it open so I can ad-lib. So if I come up with some funny things on the spot, or if there are some opportunities based on the props or the situation, we can actually ad-lib as well. But, you know, improving is improving, so you have to have a structure first so that you can improve it. If you don't have anything to fall back on, then your improving usually isn't so good.
And how often are you doing a fresh show?
Right now, we do about 10 new ones a year, which is much less than in previous years.
So almost one a month, which is pretty good.
This season, I actually want to try and do 26 again, because I'm really kind of getting fired up. The streaming stuff is really taking off.
Why don't you have your web people send a little clip once a month to Tom, and we'll put it up on our website?
Absolutely, certainly.
We'll do that for you as our little thank you for you appearing on the program.
Oh, I really appreciate that, George. It is absolutely a pleasure. You know, I mean, Coast to Coast has always been a favorite program, and it's really great to be on here. It's the other spooky voice in the night.
I can't wait until we take phone calls from people, because I want to find out from them what their favorite sci-fi film has been and things like that. I got to tell you, when I was a kid, and I'll remember this, my late dad would sit me down and we would watch science fiction theater together.
And what channel was this, George?
This was on commercial television, so it was on one of the three networks.
Was it St. Louis?
This was in Detroit, but it was nationwide.
Okay.
And it was black and white. It was before Twilight Zone,
right.
and it was just stories about the strange and unusual done in little dramatic form. So there were stories on UFOs, and I remember one where we were watching a radar room. Those people in the tower were looking at all these blips on radar, and they were talking about they were UFOs, but it was an incredible show. The music, science fiction theater, was different. I remember it?
Later 50s, and Leslie Nielsen was on an early episode of that. And they were all live, as far as I remember, that they were done live, and then they probably kinescoped them for reruns. But I believe that program was...
Ran from live. 55 to 57. So
yeah.
I was 5 to 7 years old when it ran.
Prime time.
And I was with Dad. And it was hosted by a fellow by the name of Truman Bradley. He was a war correspondent and a little movie actor from the 40s. But they did things on telepathy, flying saucers, time travel. It was great. My dad loved that show. But I will always remember him bringing me down, watching it, and just something a kid will never forget.
Now, I'm not certain, but if those are public domain, you know, we should run them on the channel, and maybe you could say something about those shows.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. Check into that. The running times are 30 minutes, minus commercials, of course.
I think there's about, 70 or 80 episodes, something like that.
And I think they ran them into some syndication, but yeah, we've got to check into that.
We need more stuff like that. I think we should try to do something like that today. Like a live troupe doing science fiction stories? That'd be wonderful.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, I think Rod Serling must have seen it and said, well, I'm going to do mine, but I'm going to do it like this.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, well, he had his own patented. There were a lot of anthology programs before Twilight Zone, but he definitely had his own spin on it.
And I think One Step Beyond came after Twilight Zone, I think.
John Newland, yeah.
Right?
John Newland's One Step Beyond. Yeah, that was a great program.
It was funny how television goes in streaks and types of shows where you've got all these sci-fi films, and then it switches to something else. And look at where we are today, how different they are. I'm going to be doing a little contest later on tonight where I'm going to be playing some tunes from some favorite television shows. They don't play
Am I
music.
Eligible? Can I win this contest?
No, you can't. You are family members are ineligible, and we consider you family. So we can't do it. And I'm giving away books.
Some consolation.
But they don't do that anymore on television. I mean, these were like full orchestras doing opens and music to these particular shows. It was the music that you identified with the program. I don't think they're doing that anymore.
It's a shame because, you know, the open to my show is about 50 seconds long, and it's that minute is very important. And I've had producers say, "Oh, it's too long. It's got to be 30 seconds or 10 seconds." And it's like, you know, the open is the whole flavor of the show. It gets your palate ready. It transports you to that place where the show is. I can't imagine Twilight Zone or Doctor Who or any of those programs without, you know, Lost in Space, without that theme music and that kind of that setup.
That's right.
It mentally prepares you and transports you to that wonderful place where that show lives every week. I can't imagine just like a 10-second bumper and here you go, no fanfare, no anything, here's your show this week.
Are you still being harassed by our old caller, JC?
JC harasses me all the time, he says, because he calls me a television terrorist so that I'm poisoning the young minds of America with horror films. He's certifiable. I don't know how you deal with that.
How does he find you?
You know, I ever since I was on Coast to Coast AM, he just has taken a shine to me or something. He's
one strange animal.
Calling me and emailing me out of the blue. So, you know, we have a program for him on my channel called Preacher Features, and we allow him to show little strange religious cartoons and things that he finds. And
he does it.
He does it, yeah. And I've never seen him, but we have a little answering machine, and we let him just rant on our answering machine, and we just play whatever he rants. We just throw it up there.
He says I hit up the mob out here.
Oh. He's a very imaginative guy. Maybe JC needs to write some science.
Don't laugh, Lobo, or you won't be laughing too much longer.
I know. I'm scared.
You're speechless now, aren't you?
I am.
But he's something else. So he's wondering. So what's your favorite? Let me ask you two different questions. But your favorite sci-fi film, not horror.
Favorite science fiction film. You know, it's hard to. You know, this sounds old-fashioned, but I mean, Forbidden Planet is a really good movie.
Yeah, it was well done. You imagine what it would be like with all these computer graphics, but it wouldn't be the same, would it?
It wouldn't be. You know, that the id that Disney animated for that is amazing. I think it's still captivating today. And I think Robbie the Robot is the best screen robot. I can't, even C-3PO and R2-D2 are not as sophisticated as Robbie. Robbie is the most sophisticated robot for the screen that I've ever seen.
Yeah, danger.
And I think, as far as the Universal Monsters, I don't know if it counts as science fiction, but I love H.G. Wells. I think it's a tie maybe between War of the Worlds and The Invisible Man, but I love The Invisible Man. It's carried all by, Claude Rains and his voice, and that voice is just, it penetrates you. It's such a great performance.
Do you remember a Japanese film, sci-fi film called The Mysterians?
Absolutely.
Do you play that? Have you played that yet?
No, I would love to host The Mysterians.
That was a classic.
Fantastic one.
I would go with Dad to the movies to see those kinds of things. He just brought me along with all those. I think he really wanted me to get in this. Look what happened to me. Look what I'm doing now.
Well, I think he did the right thing. He was preparing you for your future career.
I remember we were...
You have to deal with Mysterians for real.
We were in Detroit. And we were parked on the street, and we had come out of a movie house, and it was late, and I'm like 9 years old, and it's snowing in Detroit, and it's cold. So we're in the car, and, you know, these were not very sophisticated cars, but they worked. They ran. And Dad, the windows were icy and everything else, so he asked me, I'm 9 years old, he says, anybody behind me? And so I roll down the window. And I looked down the street with my head out the window. It's like 15 degrees out. And I don't see any cars coming down the street. And that's what I thought he meant. And I said, nope, nobody's there, Dad. So he puts the car in reverse, backs up, and within 2 seconds, boom, he hits the car that's parked behind him.
Oh,
and he just stares at me and says, I thought you said there was no one behind me. I said, well, there wasn't. And I misunderstood what
he
was
saying. On the street,
So he gets out of his car, he looks, and at those times they had these huge chrome bumpers on both cars.
Right. This is
no damage.
This is the late 50s.
Yeah.
Is that what we're talking
about?
Yeah.
He lucked out 59. He lucks out. No damage on his car or the other person's. And off we go in the snowy Detroit weather. But sci-fi films and horror films for me have brought back incredible boyhood memories. What about you?
Sure. It's a coming of age. It's a rite of passage. And like in your case and in my case, a very bonding experience with your father.
Favorite horror film for you?
Oh, that's really tough. I really do like. It's certainly not a classic by any stretch of the word, but I really enjoy. And it's from the '80s, Return of the Living Dead. I just enjoy it.
How about like The Conjuring and things like that?
I like The Conjuring. I enjoyed The Conjuring. I even thought Insidious was quite good.
Would you call The Conjuring a horror film?
I would.
Yeah,
I would call it a horror film. It doesn't miss a trick. It's got every gag. It's been in every haunted house movie since the 30s. It's just been reinvented in that.
Has Hollywood
Insidious is just Poltergeist all over again too?
Has Hollywood carried the torch with these kinds of films, or have they dropped the ball?
I think they've dropped the ball overall. Where they're just out of touch with audiences. I think that they've just the industry is in a place that where they're so afraid that they're not going to make money that they overthink everything, and they end up betraying their audience most of the time, with a lot of these. But there are, luckily, with a lot of the independent films and all the strange kind of small sub companies and stuff, there are some new films that I think are more imaginative and smaller. I think the smaller movies with the smaller budgets kind of have a better chance because, there's not as much at stake and people will actually take a chance rather than regurgitating the same four ideas over and over again.
Well, your idea to do Cinema Insomnia is brilliant. And, I just think you need more exposure for people to know about it. And I want to help you do that.
Well, thank you, George. Well, like I said, we'll put together some bits for you, and
get them to Tom, and we'll get them to our Sean and Lex, our webmasters, and once a month we'll highlight a show and put it up on the website.
That would be fantastic.
That'd be cool. And just let me know what the response is for you, because I get a kick.
Absolutely. Well, we'll definitely have St. Louis on our side. I know that.
St. Louis, Detroit, you name it, they'll all be there for you.
You know, any place with cold winters, I think horror and sci-fi films do really good.
You're absolutely right. Absolutely right. In a moment, we'll open up the phone lines for you to share your stories with us or a question with Mr. Lobo. Have you ever had a film that you watched that scared the living daylights out of you?
Pretty Woman.
So you're a comedian too, huh?
All horror hosts are comedians, George. That's rule number one. We're never scary. We're always funny.
At least you don't sit in a casket.
I've never done that. I've always been jealous, I feel like I don't know. It's very hard. I tried that once, and it's hard to, like, just sit straight up out of a casket and talk.
Yeah. Sir Graves Gasly did it out of Detroit.
Graves Gasly is one of the greatest, I've never saw Morgus get out of a casket.
No, Morgus was the mad scientist. He was always running around.
Yeah. He did marvelous, all of his experiments and stuff. I mean, his stuff was almost like absurdist humor, like Andy Kaufman kind
of.
Never really sure where you stood. Like, is he doing an experiment for real?
Everything went wrong. Everything he did in those TV shows in terms of experiments went wrong. Everything.
Everything in the old ice house.
Yeah, it was just hilarious. I'm going to be in New Orleans, I think it's October, for an event. It's
really?
A conspiracy event, and he lives down there. So we're going to get together.
I'd love to meet him. He seems like such an amazing person.
He's a great guy. He is a great guy.
And he's still getting out and about.
Yeah, he's still doing his thing. He's got to be in his 80s now.
He is legendary, I often say, the Wacky World of Dr. Morgus is the first film with a horror host. And I really think that Jerry Lewis ripped him off for the nutty repression.
That's what he says. He believes that happened, too. He came to town years ago, visited me in the studio, surprise visit, and then wanted to conduct an experiment on the air live where he was going to set up a force field around him and told me to smack him in the mouth. And I refused to until he practically begged me to. I smacked him and knocked out his teeth.
Oh, my gosh. Oh,
they went
wow.
flying. I mean, you could hear it. Whack. And he said, oh, George, this is not working anymore. But he's hilarious. Anyway, stay with us, Mr. Lobo. We're going to come back. Final hour to go with you. We're going to open up the phone lines. Questions for Mr. Lobo about sci-fi films and horror films. And also share with us what you like next on Coast to Coast AM.